I am an ape. I stand and wait. A masterpiece, a hairy beast. I move so fast, but I take a chance and come up close. I'm not a ghost.
At a time when animal species are becoming extinct on every continent and we are confronted with bad news about the environment nearly every day, Dr. Jane Goodall, one of the world's most renowned scientists, brings us inspiring news about the future of the animal kingdom. With great curiosity, Goodall, along with Cincinnati Zoo director Thane Maynard, share fascinating survival stories about the American crocodile, the California condor, the black-footed ferret, and more, all formerly endangered species and species once on the verge of extinction whose populations are now being regenerated. They do so in the new book, Hope for Animals and Their World, interweaving her own firsthand experiences in the field with a compelling researcher of premier scientists. Goodall illuminates the great efforts of environmentalists and the critical need to protect the habitats of these species. Jane Goodall is the world's foremost authority on chimpanzees and internationally renowned conservationist. She is the founder of the Jane Goodall Institute and has received many distinguished awards in science. She's the author of many acclaimed books, including the bestseller Reason for Hope. The name of the new book, again, Hope for Animals and Their World. And it is a great honor and a pleasure to welcome Dr. Jane Goodall to the roundtable this morning. Good morning. How are you?
Well, good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
Well, it's just such a treat and a pleasure to speak with you. And the thing I love about this book and love about so much of your work is that when we're faced with such a grim environmental picture and environmental news all of the time, this is a very inspirational and optimistic book, isn't it?
Yes, and it was thus designed to be because, you know, I have the, well, it's exhausting to travel 300 days a year, but at the same time, I do meet extraordinary people on my travels, and the media tends to be rather concentrating on the doom and gloom, and it's not surprising. There's a lot of it, and it's true. It's not something we can shrug off and say, well, climate change doesn't really, you know, it's not really going to happen. It is happening. But at the same time, there are also amazing things going on, fantastic things, species that would be long gone and just known from a few museum specimens if it wasn't for some real heroes out there, some extraordinary people working to save animal and plant species and to restore ecosystems. And I find it really inspiring, and I wanted to share these stories.
You say in the introduction that you have a Symbols of Hope file.
Yes, I actually have got some of those symbols with me right now. I'm looking at them because we launched the book today at an event this evening in New York, and I will have those symbols on display.
And these are the things that make you optimistic for the future.
Well, sometimes one does get, you know, you read something pretty grim and you think, oh, gosh. And then I like to be able to either think about or even to touch some of the things which at the time gave me such good feelings and to know that, yeah, that's, you know, we still got this indomitable spirit, and we will not give up, and we shall go on fighting to save these amazing things. So I have this long feather from a condor, a primary feather. It's about, I don't know, it's about, it's so tall. It's a great long feather. And feathers from peregrine falcons who were locally extinct for hundreds of years and have come back. And the paw print of the last wild-caught little black-footed ferret. So there were eight of them, and from those eight, a captive breeding program has restored them to, I think it's seven of their nine original states across the country.
This book can be a bit of a thriller because there are cases where species were saved literally at the last minute and against all odds.
Oh, absolutely. Like the black robin of New Zealand. I think that's my favorite. I mean, just imagine, five birds left in the world, only one a female. So give up, right? I mean, what, you can't
right.
do much with that. But Don Merton wouldn't give up. He loved black robins. He felt personally responsible. And so by cleverly manipulating the nest and helping the pair to raise the young they had that first season, and continuing to work with them to help them survive for the next, I think, about 10, 12 years. I can't remember how long. And now there's more than 400 of them.
You used a term just a moment ago in speaking about Don Merton about personal responsibility. And where does that come from, that feeling of personal responsibility where you feel that you can actually make a difference and save that species of the black robin?
Well, I think, first of all, the connection needs to be on an emotional level. You've got to care. And whether you care about the actual animal or whether you care about its unique place in an ecosystem, whatever it is, there needs to be passion involved if you're going to tackle something which most people think is, if not impossible, if not stupid impossible, you know. And so I've met all these people who have this passion. In fact, I think my favorite chapter in the book is one of the last ones where it talks about why save these species and how people who work so hard actually have this connection.
You talk in the book about the resiliency of nature and the fact that things can be turned around. And I'm curious as to whether you are ever surprised by the resiliency of the natural world.
I absolutely am. And, you know, a very recent example, in the early 90s, I flew over the Gombe National Park, site of the famous chimp study that I began 50 years ago. And I knew there was deforestation outside the park. But flying over it in a small plane, I realized that the deforestation was almost total outside the tiny 30-square-mile park. And so that led us to launch a program we call Take Care, which works with villagers to improve their lives in a very holistic way, which we don't have time to go into now. But because we've so improved their lives and because they were the ones who chose what to do and we helped them to do it, they've now put aside 10 to 20% of their land in such a way as to form a buffer zone around the tiny Gombe National Park. And when I stood there a few months ago, looking out over what had been completely bare and barren hills just 4 years before, and saw that trees were already about 20 foot high, right the way along as far as I could see, I had tears in my eyes because that was it, you see. You help the people, help them get over this crippling poverty which forces them to destroy their environment. And lo and behold, things, magic happens.
Your wife's work has made a significant impact on how people view that relationship with their non-human cousins, whether it be primate and animals in general. Share with us a little bit about how you believe attitudes have changed over the years in that regard.
Well, I know they've changed because I meet more and more, particularly young people, who care and care very passionately. And you don't hear so often parents saying, oh, don't worry, it's only an animal, you know, when kids were crying because an animal was in pain. So there is still an entrenched group or groups of people who I think choose not to believe that animals have personalities, minds, and feelings because they're involved in some kind of invasive research or intensive farming or something. And it's not very convenient to think that the animals that you're basically torturing, at least for the animal you are, have these feelings the same as we do or similar.
Dr. Jane Goodall joins us this morning. The name of the book, Hope for Animals and Their World, How Endangered Species Are Being Rescued from the Brink. It is published by Grand Central Publishing. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Goodall right after this short break.